Good morning. We're starting just a little earlier, and I appreciate you accommodating the court in that regard. Do we have people here from the PVA Appeals Office? Welcome. Glad you could make the argument this morning, and hope to have an opportunity to meet with you after the argument. Are counsel ready to proceed? Good morning. All right, Mr. Carpenter, you have 30 minutes. Do you wish to reserve any of that time?
I'll reserve 10 minutes.
10 minutes, all right. You may proceed.
May it please the court, this case involves the question of whether or not the government's position at the administrative level in this case was substantially justified.
Mr. Carpenter, I'm just going to cut you short right at the beginning.
Oh, okay.
In 2002, when you first appealed, did you make the arguments that you have now succeeded on with regard to the interpretation of 1111? In review of the 2002 decision, it does not appear that you made the argument that clear and convincing evidence was needed to demonstrate aggravation.
Oh, no.
Okay. That was then made at the Federal Circuit after the Wagner case came out.
That's correct, Your
Honor. All right. Go ahead.
Okay.
let me ask you a question also, right. Sort of as preliminary to this, and that is, what precisely is the government position that you claim is not substantially justified? Precisely.
The error that was found by the court in this case, which was that there was an inadequate statement of reasons and bases which addressed the favorable evidence that addressed the element of aggravation.
So it's reasonable bases. You're saying that they failed to, the government failed to provide sufficient reasons and bases.
That's what the court held. That's correct.
Okay. Now, what was the error, why weren't they substantially justified at the administrative level?
Because the board did not provide an adequate statement of reasons or bases for its decision in its consideration of the favorable evidence that addressed the question of aggravation.
And why were they, what is the position that you believe the government didn't take, or the government's position was not substantially justified at the court level?
Actually, we did not make an allegation in that regard in our application for EJIA. We relied exclusively on the administrative position. It was the government that came back and alleged that both the administrative position and the litigation position were substantially justified. But the allegation was not made as to the litigation position.
Is it your position then that the government has to be substantially justified in both the administrative as well as the judicial proceedings?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's my understanding of the case law. That
what if there was a different standard that the government had to meet in the administrative proceedings versus the judicial proceedings?
I'm not sure what you mean by
well, if the law
standard.
Was, as the court said, if the law was at the time the board issued its decision, if the law was as it was, then where is the error? Who committed the error?
Well, the board committed the error, Your Honor, and a review of the board.
But if the board was following the agency's policy at the time, how could they commit an error?
Because the board wasn't following the agency's position.
Okay, so then the error you're alleging is from the secretary's position then, not the board's position.
No, Your Honor.
Well, then how could the board, if the secretary's position, if the board is required to follow the regulations of the agency or the policy of the agency, which they're statutorily required to do, then how could the board commit an error? Wouldn't the error be the secretary's?
No, Your Honor. If the error in this case was the basis for the board's decision, the basis for the board's decision in this case relied upon an application of the presumption of aggravation, not the presumption of soundness. And in addressing
but it relied upon the regulation as it was interpreted at the time.
Oh, no, Your Honor, they did not. There is no reference to the regulation that interpreted the presumption of aggravation, or excuse me, the presumption of soundness.
Isn't it the same regulation?
No, Your Honor. They're two different regulations. The regulation that deals with presumption of aggravation specifically deals with the presumption of aggravation under 1153. And in fact, they cited in the board's decision at page 11 of the board's decision, or excuse me, I believe it's page 8 of the board's decision. I can't find the page in my notes at the moment, but they cited to this court's decision in Staden. This court's decision in Staden involved 1153 and the VA's regulation interpreting 1153. The VA's regulation, which interprets 1153, has to do with the burden on the VA to present clear and unmistakable evidence after a condition which was noted at entrance, which was not the case here, was indicated to have existed prior to service. Therefore, the 1153 statute applies, not the 1111 statute. In this case, the 1111 statute applied, and although this court's order in finding the error did not differentiate between 1111 and 1153, nevertheless, the error committed by the board in this case was its failure to provide an adequate statement of reasons and bases regarding the question of favorable evidence that went to aggravation. Now, whether it went to the aggravation prong under 1111 or it went to the aggravation under 1153 is not necessarily material to the question of whether or not they were substantially justified in taking that position. That is the VA.
Let's go back here. If the regulation, whether it be 1111 or 1153, was in place, wasn't the board required to follow that regulation?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Then let's go back. Then how could the board err if they followed that regulation?
They did not, Your Honor. They did not file.
So the board did.
The board did not.
Okay. Then the secretary must have. Right, because
no.
the whole issue here is whether or not the regulation, whether or not 1111, as interpreted by the secretary, was erroneous, was substantially justified. The secretary's position with regard to that.
No,
I'm just trying to figure out at what level you're. I understand reasons or bases, okay, but reasons or bases wouldn't have any application if, in fact, the board was following the rule of the agency.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But there is no indication in this board decision that they were following the rule of the agency regarding 1111. They were not following the rule of the agency regarding 1111. They were, in fact, applying 1153. And the 1153 did not apply in this case. 1111 did, and that was the ultimate determination after several trips to the Federal Circuit, that this case was controlled by the second prong of the presumption of soundness under 1111. But in the board's decision does not rely upon the then interpretation of 1111. They relied exclusively on their analysis of the presumption under 1153.
Do you believe that they followed the agency's analysis of the aggravation principle, the board? Did they apply what the agency's policy was with regard to aggravation, the board?
As it related to 1153, yes. Not as it related to 1111.
Well, but what difference does it make?
Well, the difference that it makes...
If they applied what the agency position is.
Because the government alleged that the board's position was substantially justified because they followed the agency's position on 1111.
That has to do with their position here.
No, Your Honor.
The allegation?
Is at page 8, and it said to the court, considering the then current precedent, this court should hold that the board's 1999 analysis had a reasonable basis in law and fact and thus the secretary's position at the administrative level was substantially justified. That's all it
That's
said.
That's our argument here.
I beg your pardon?
That's our argument here at the court. That's the secretary's argument here.
That's the argument they made in
here.
Response.
Here, right?
When you say here, Your Honor, are you referring to here in relationship to the EJIA application or here in relationship to the defense?
Well, if you're talking about substantially justified, you're talking about the EJIA application.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that is what the government said, because that's their burden under the EJIA statute, to show that the board's position, the administrative position taken by the secretary, was reasonable or substantially justified. It was not substantially justified because it relied upon an analysis that was conclusory, based upon a finding of this court, that there was no increase during the period of service, when there was, in fact, favorable evidence that there was an increase during service. That is not a correct application of 1153 as interpreted by the secretary in their regulation that clear and unmistakable evidence is required to rebut the presumption of aggravation, even if they were correct in applying the presumption of aggravation under 1153, which they were not. The controlling disposition of this case had to do with the fact that 1111 was interpreted by the Federal Circuit in Wagner to have two prongs. Prong one, requiring clear and unmistakable evidence that the condition preexisted. And prong two is that...
I know what the Federal Circuit said. Well, I'm just asking you what was reasonable for the board to do. That's what I'm asking you.
And it was not reasonable for the board, as the court found, to have concluded that there was not a basis for the allegation of clear and unmistakable
error. Of course, that was later on, right? I'm talking about and I'm not going to belabor this except for this question. If you agreed that the secretary's policy was that you did not have to show both occurrence before entry into service and aggravation by clear and unmistakable evidence, and the board followed that policy,
no,
because
Your Honor,
they're bound by it.
With respect, they did not follow that policy. The policy under the regulation under 1153 is that clear and unmistakable evidence was required to rebut aggravation.
Right.
Okay. So, therefore, that's the law that they applied, and they did not apply it correctly because the court found that they had made a conclusory statement and that conclusory statement could not support the requirement of the then existing law, which required clear and unmistakable evidence for aggravation, not for the second prong of aggravation under 1111. And it seems to me, Your Honor, that the government cannot come in and bootstrap substantial justification of the agency's position by merely declaring that they follow what they describe generically as the then controlling precedent. The then controlling precedent was their own interpretation of 1153 and the case that they cited to in Staden from this court, which affirmed the secretary's regulation on presumption of aggravation. The error here by the board, which was not substantially justified, and for which there's been no showing made by the government that it was that the board ignored favorable evidence when determining whether or not there was or was not clear and unmistakable error.
What regulation? They didn't reference 3.304.
That's correct.
What did they reference? 3.306?
3.306. Well, actually, they didn't reference 3.306.
Well, actually, they did.
Well, they did? I'm sorry. I thought that was referenced in Staden.
No, it's in there. Page 12, they reference it in various other pages. But my question is, in 3.306, I keep hearing you say the standard of clear and unmistakable.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Where in 3.306 is there a requirement that aggravation be shown by the same standard, clear and unmistakable?
Well, this court's decision in Staden interpreted that to say that clear and unmistakable evidence, obvious and manifest, is required to rebut the presumption of aggravation where there is a pre-existing disability that underwent an increase during service. That's okay. This court's interpretation in Staden.
What regulation were they interpreting?
1153 and 3.306B, parens 1994. And that comes
isn't B wartime service? 3.306B is wartime service.
Yes, and I thought we had wartime service in this case.
Do we?
But I don't recall that off the top of my head. I'd have to...
I guess we can find out quick enough, huh? August 58 to May 59.
Yeah, so if that was, that would have had to have been in Korea, and I don't recall the Korean War dates off the top of my head, John. I'm sorry.
So let's assume it wasn't.
Okay.
Then it's not 3.306B, and we're in 3.306A. 3.306A, or peacetime, does not require that same standard, does it?
No, Your Honor. Except that. That was the regulation, and that was the statute that was relied upon, or excuse me, the case that was relied upon by the board for its determination, which this court rejected, that there was more than adequate evidence showing the veteran's pre-existing heart disorder had underwent no permanent increase in severity during his period
of
service.
Let's not jump the gun here. If it's peacetime, and we'll figure that out. But for purposes here, if it's peacetime, then the standard the board applied was not wrong. If they're applying 3.306. So we'll come back to whether or not we got retroactive application and all that.
That would be correct.
Okay. So as I understand your argument, though, it really was a reasons and basis because they applied 3.306, but they didn't apply the higher standard. That may fall out if your veteran did not have wartime service.
Well, if I could clarify that for
okay.
me. My argument is that under the Aegis statute, the burden is on the VA to show that the government's position was substantially justified. And the mere declaration that the then current law, as I just recited you in their single assertion of substantial justification, has not been shown. And it is not shown nor supported by this board decision.
Well,
It's their burden of proof, Your Honor.
I understand it's their burden. At the end of the day, it's their burden, and their burden is whether we understand it. And so my question to you is, because you know this thing has been up and down, confusing, changed laws, interpretations that existed previously, and so forth, et cetera. So just point blank, this board comes in, this board decides it. They don't cite the 3.304, you're correct, but they do cite the 3.306. They don't use the clear and unmistakable standard, you're correct, but you don't know if your veteran's a combat veteran and entitled to it. We'll figure that out, okay? But if we're just going to go on the record here, we may not have to figure that out. It's just not here. We'll assume he wasn't. Presumption, okay? So let's just get straight and figure out what is right here. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that your one argument, that their reasons and basis is erroneous, might fail depending on whether your veteran is a combat veteran or not. Now, do you have a second argument that somehow says that the law was the law as it always existed and somehow or another?
No.
I'm not making
that assertion, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'm relying strictly upon the error found by this court.
Well, this court, let's get to that. This court's error, if I'm not mistaken, was simply a remand directed by the Federal Circuit so that under 1111, not your regulation 3.306, so that under 1111,
correct.
The board could apply the appropriate standard of the law as we now completely understand it. And you contrast that to the other case that out there, which confuses this whole thing, Jordan, which said that, yeah, but the regulation, if that's all they were applying, and that changed, the change in law doesn't matter.
Right.
Well, we know this board didn't apply 3.304. They actually applied 1111 and 3.306.
Well, I'm not sure they ever applied 1111. But
well, they certainly cited to
1153.
Well, they cited both.
Right. But, Your Honor, I'm sorry, but I agree that this court was directed by the Federal Circuit to return this case. But the this court also made a determination in examining what the board did to give direction to the board on re-adjudication that when it made the conclusory statement that there was more than adequate evidence showing that the condition
I agree with you, but that's because now 1111 applies. Because now the second prong of 1111 requires clear and unmistakable evidence. Not because at the time 3.306B was applicable. That determination hasn't been made.
No, but, Your Honor, even under 3.306A, there had to have been some evidentiary showing. And the board relied exclusively on medical board evidence and disregarded favorable evidence that was submitted by Mrs. Patrick in favor of evidence of an increase during service. Now, you can't, it doesn't really matter whether the standard was clear and unmistakable or some lesser standard.
Did this court find that? I mean, it might, you can point to it, but. Because there's a lot of cases here you had to read before coming in, but it strikes me that all what we did was say, hey, 1111 applies. You have to use the higher standard, so go evaluate the evidence you have under the higher standard. That's what I think happened. So the argument that they may have misweighed and everything else under the regulation they were applying is yet another argument, because I think your one argument you said was 3.306B, which may not even apply.
But the point is, Your Honor, I believe, at least as I read Judge Green's original decision in
well, he's here.
The dispositive
and I called it a confusing tapestry.
In Judge Green's dispositive order, Judge Green specifically addressed a different error that was made by the board in 1999. Which dealt with the failure to address favorable evidence that showed incurrence and relying, regardless of the standard, on a conclusory statement that it underwent no increase when there was favorable evidence to the contrary.
Do you want to point that out to me in this opinion?
It's at page 11 of the court's dispositive order.
And is that
after that, we'll have to move to the...
Yeah, okay. We'll, I'm sorry. We're out of time. Yeah. Okay.
The court will note, though, that under 38 CFR, section 3.2, subparagraph E, the period of war for the Korean conflict runs from June 27, 1950 through January 31, 1955. All right, government.
May it please the court. I'd like to clarify just what the board did in 1999. They essentially looked at two things. One, whether in 1986 there was sufficient evidence to show that the condition preexisted service. And if you look at the record at page 18, page 11 of the board's decision, first they find that there's ample evidence of record to it, various private and service clinical records justifying the board's conclusion that the veteran's rheumatic heart disease did in fact pre-exist active service. Therefore, they found the first prong under section 1111, essentially finding, as Judge Green found in his decision, that there was clear and unmistakable evidence, or that the 1986 board was correct in finding there was clear and unmistakable evidence of pre-existence. The next thing they did was find that there was more than adequate evidence showing that the disability did underwent no permanent increase in severity during service. That's the second holding. That means that the presumption of aggravation under pre-Wagner law did not attach. The board did not apply the presumption of aggravation because they found no increase in severity. And in Judge Green's first two opinions, he specifically found that the board's reasons and bases were adequate, even though appellant had argued that they were not. The only thing that changed between his first two opinions and his third opinion was Wagner, the interpretation of Section 1111. Suddenly...
Well, Wagner and Jordan...
Wagner and Jordan...
Figure all that out.
Yes, Your Honor.
What was the law at the time of the original board decision?
1986, that the presumption of soundness under Section 1111 could be rebutted solely by clear and unmistakable evidence of preexistence.
What about the fact that when the Federal Circuit tells us what the law is, that's what the law always was?
That's not what we would look at if we were looking at substantial justification. What we're looking at when we're looking at substantial justification is the state of the law at the time the board rendered its decision.
Mm-hmm, but wasn't the state of the law, by virtue of the Federal Circuit's decision, they sort of issue it nunk-pro-tunk back to the enactment of the statute. Wasn't then the state of the law back when the board issued its decision the interpretation that was later made, but the clarification that was made or later made by the Federal Circuit? So, if that's the case, didn't the board fail to apply the applicable law?
The Supreme Court made clear in Pierce that the question in substantial justification is not what the law is now, but what the Secretary was mm-hmm. substantially justified in believing it to have been.
Mm-hmm. But again, if and the Secretary was mistaken because the Secretary, didn't argue the law properly, didn't interpret it properly, and argued, in essence, continued to push an argument that was contrary to the law, how could their position be substantially justified?
If we were to hold that the judicial pronouncement now of what the law has always been would be that the Secretary is always wrong back then the Secretary could never be substantially justified where a court has ruled on the interpretation of a statute and found that the Secretary was interpreting it incorrectly. But on numerous occasions that this court and the Federal Circuit has found the Secretary substantially justified in just those cases.
Well, why would the Federal Circuit then remand the case to the board to apply 1111?
Well, it's a different standard than when we're looking at substantial justification as okay. opposed to, what the correct law that the board needed to be applying.
So you're saying that in the view of the Secretary had no reason to believe that their position was in error?
Correct, Your Honor. That the interpretation of the statute, the Secretary's interpretation of the statute, had never been called into question at the time of the 99 board decision. This court had rendered decisions interpreting the statute in the same manner, Bagby and Duran. And it wasn't until 4 years later in Cotant that the Secretary's interpretation was even called into question. And in that case, this court described it as an extraordinary, complicated, entangled web. Even in Wagner, the Federal Circuit noted that on its face, Section 1111 appears to be somewhat self-contradictory.
After 2003, did the Secretary continue to argue that there was no requirement to prove aggravation by clear and unmistakable evidence in addition to proving that the particular disability occurred prior to service?
Do you mean in this case or overall?
This case.
In this case, yes, we did, Your Honor, but only to the extent that it didn't apply to this case because the 99 board did not address service connection on the merits. They were looking at Q in a 1986 board decision, and a Q claim is judged based on the law that existed at the time, and the Secretary's regulation defining Q, Section 20.1403, specifically does not include changes in interpretation of the statute that occurs after the board decision in question. And the Federal Circuit in Jordan, at the time that we were still pursuing this case, had come down and in what this court had interpreted as saying that the new interpretation of the statute set out in Wagner did not apply retroactively to Q claims. And it wasn't until the Federal Circuit's final decision in this case that it became clear it applied in this case.
So there's really two levels going on. One is a level of what is the law, what does it mean, and was a mistake made? And the other is how do we apply that under Q? And then third is the substantial justification.
Correct, Your Honor.
This argument isn't being made by your opposing counsel, but kind of raised by Judge Hagel, and I thought it might be in here. But I'm very curious. If the general counsel, first off, we know the VA lived in splendid isolation for all these years, right? And then the general counsel looks at this in 2003 and says, my gosh, it's so plain and clear. Whoever wrote that regulation, you know, doesn't understand English, pretty much. And so from that standpoint, then you look at a board that doesn't even look at your regulation, 3.304. They weren't applying it. They were applying 1111. They don't mention 304, so don't go there. They're applying 1111, and as your opposing counsel noted, the other regulation. Why isn't that just plain error on the part of the board? If it's so plain and clear, why couldn't they look at 1111 and say, geez, it has to be clearly and unmistakably, because we don't have any interpretations up here holding otherwise. We just followed the arguments made by both people until Code 10. And then we said, we ain't getting into that mess. Secretary can take care of it, right? So why?
The board was required to apply the secretary's interpretation.
But he didn't.
Of the statute. He didn't cite to the regulation, Your Honor.
Okay.
I don't mean to say he either.
Well, that's true. I understand what you're saying.
The board didn't cite to the regulation, Your Honor.
Right.
That doesn't mean they didn't apply it. And it's clear from the board's decision that they were applying Section 1111 consistent with that interpretation of the statute. They essentially found that in 1986 there was clear and unmistakable evidence of preexistence.
Mm-hmm.
But then they went on and they required a showing of increase in severity before the presumption of aggravation attached. So
which isn't required by the statute. Your argument, Your argument basically is, even though they don't mention 3.304, even though it looks like they're applying 3.306, et cetera, that in the background they really were looking at 304.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
You have to look at, there's two things that the board did. The second part of the discussion where they cite to 3.306 was the discussion regarding aggravation, increase in severity.
Correct.
They found that the presumption of aggravation didn't attach.
Because there was no increase
in severity.
Correct. But, I mean, if you're just looking at 1111 and the plain interpretation by the general counsel, and the board's looking at 1111, and they see that, and being people who can read English, and this is not confusing according to your general counsel, says, gee, we have to have clear and unmistakable evidence as to both. But the board ignores the second half of that and moves on to this other interpretation and says it doesn't apply, et cetera, et cetera. Why wouldn't that be error?
I'm not really sure I understand your question. The board was bound to apply the regulation or the interpretation set out in the regulation. The completely lost my train of thought. Really, when we're looking
sorry, my clerks tell me I do that to them too.
extraordinarily complicated.
Exactly.
I got what I needed.
I want to reiterate this court set out in Stillwell the totality of the circumstances test for determining substantial justification. And there are multiple factors, and the relevant factor here would be that the board's decision must be consistent with VA policy and court precedent. And the board's decision was consistent with VA's longstanding interpretation of Section 1111 and this court's decisions in Bagby and Duran, all of which interpreted the statute in the same way. And the fact that the secretary for decades, this court, had interpreted that in that manner, why on earth would the board have any reason to interpret it in any other manner? There was no reason to believe
because
that this
it was so
correct.
Plain and clear, according to your VA general counsel. I didn't write those words. I was just trying to ask you how it was so plain and clear. Everyone else seems to be confused by the darn thing, but your general counsel thought it was plain and clear.
But
well, fresh eyes. You know, it's sort of like, how long did the 3.304, how long was that in existence before the general counsel opinion?
40 years.
40?
1961, I think it was promulgated.
So from 1961 to what, 2003?
But we know that carries no weight.
And the board decision was in 1999.
Correct, Your Honor. I would like to remind the court that the purpose of the EJ is not to punish the government for decisions later determined incorrect, but rather to afford appellants an avenue through which to address government abuse, i.e. action taken in the face of known law contrary to the secretary's position. At the time the board issued their decision in 1999, the law was basically clear, and it was that the presumption of soundness could be rebutted solely by clear and unmistakable evidence of preexistence. The secretary had been applying it that way for...
The regulatory interpretation of the law was that.
If we... Yes. And this court had already...
We can only go so far with all that. As I understand, the history of that regulation did have clear and unmistakable. At one point, it dropped out. There was some argument that maybe it shouldn't have, et cetera, et cetera. So, but to the general counsel, we know it's plain and clear.
To the general counsel, apparently alone. Again, I would point out that if we look at the fact that this court affirmed the decision twice under pre-Wagner law, finding that the board's reasons and bases were adequate, and then later, after they'd been told to apply Wagner and apply the new interpretation that suddenly requires the board to find clear and unmistakable evidence of aggravation to rebut the presumption of soundness, then the sole basis, the catalyst for the remand in this case, was the change in law in Wagner. And the secretary would assert that the position at the administrative level was substantially justified. No further questions?
I hesitate to ask this question. A reasons or basis remand. Just what kind of remand are you prepared to? Is that a? No, I won't ask the question. I'll save it for another day. Maybe I'll ask Mr. Carver.
Oh, that's okay.
Reasons or basis remand.
Yes, Your Honor.
Especially in this case, given. The direction given in the decision equates to a remand that makes you a prevailing party?
I believe it does, Your Honor.
You believe it does?
I believe it does. And the reason that I believe it does is because the board made a mistake when it adjudicated the...
Well, the board's decision may still turn out to be correct.
Well, they've already...
Well, oh, yeah. At the time. I mean, a reasons or basis remand said, go back and articulate better your decision.
That's correct, Your Honor. And as
we didn't say the decision that you have is wrong. We may say we can't tell, but your decision may be right. It just hasn't been articulated well.
And as I understand this court's rationale in Gilbert, it was because this court could not understand the decision. And if this court could not understand the decision, then neither the appellant nor this court were adequately informed. If they're not adequately informed, and in particular in this case, when they're not adequately informed about favorable evidence that goes to the dispositive question about what occurred during the period of active duty service, after it was established that the condition existed prior to service, is clearly relevant to the determination as to whether or not there was or was not a clear and unmistakable error made in this case. But I would urge this court to reject the government's assertion that the board applied 1111 in this case. They did make reference to 1111, but to assert that they applied 1111 in any manner.
Well, why did the board refer to there is no evidence of permanent increase in severity?
Because they were applying the presumption of aggravation.
But why did they have to if they were only having to apply 3.304?
Death now well, for
what
the government's would position.
What would be evidence of a permanent increase in severity? What does that equate to? Does that not equate to aggravation?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So either it was aggravated thereby or not aggravated thereby.
That's right. And they made that determination, as this court found, based upon a conclusionary statement without any discussion of the favorable evidence concerning
what took place. But would it not satisfy the 1111 requirement, or at least an attempt to?
Oh, no, it would not satisfy the 1111 requirement. It could potentially satisfy the 1153 requirement. The difference between the 1111 requirement under the second prong is that the VA is instructed to presume that the condition was not aggravated by service. They have to presume that it was, and they have to show clear and unmistakable evidence that it was not. That not any increase during service. Increase during service is the threshold showing under 1153 to apply 1153.
But if they were to go through the exercise of determining whether or not there was a permanent increase,
then they were applying 1153, Your Honor. They were going on the basis that...
What is aggravation?
Beg your pardon?
What is aggravation? How do you determine aggravation?
You determine aggravation based upon an increase in severity during service
right.
of the pre-existing condition.
That's under 1111 or 1153.
No, Your Honor. Under 1111, you are the VA is required to presume that it was aggravated.
If what?
If the condition...
If there is a permanent increase in severity.
No, Your Honor.
If there is evidence of an increase in severity.
No, Your Honor. That's under 1153. Respectfully,
yes, that's right.
1111 gives the veteran whose condition is not noted at entrance an advantage over the condition that was noted at entrance. The condition that was noted at entrance is covered under 1153 and requires under this court's decision in Hunt specific affirmative evidence on the part of the veteran to show an increase. That showing of an increase is not required under 1111. But the fact is that I would like to direct the court's attention before I run out of time to the bottom of page 12 to demonstrate to this court precisely what the board did in this case. The board's conclusion in their concluding paragraph was, based upon the aforementioned, it is clear at the time of the March 1986 decision denying service connection for cause of death, the board was clearly within the bounds of rating judgment. Being within the bounds of rating judgment is not a determination relative to whether or not there was or was not clear and unmistakable evidence to rebut the presumption or whether there was evidence on the aggravation.
But you can't ignore the follow-on sentence.
No, I'm about to go to that, Your
Honor,
because what they do conclude is that Mrs. Patrick was merely asserting a disagreement is how the facts were weighed, and that's an misinterpretation of the facts. They make a finding that Mrs. Patrick misinterpreted the facts and not an administrative failure to apply the correct statutory or regulatory provisions to the correct and relevant facts. Such does not rise to the level of clear and unmistakable evidence as that term is defined. What they found was she didn't present a valid claim of Q. That was their determination. And I interpret the determination made by Judge Green is that she must have established a valid claim of clear and unmistakable evidence because she had evidence, was able to point to evidence extant in the record of an increase in the condition while on active duty for service.
Well, there is an issue as to whether you raise a claim of Q or you don't establish a claim of Q. You're suggesting this says that you didn't raise a claim of Q,
and the
I
remedy,
suppose you can read it that way.
But and the remedy for not raising a proper claim
is to dismiss.
Is dismissed without
right.
prejudice.
But I think if you read, well, we'll get into it. I want to go back to 2002 when you came up here.
Mm-hmm.
When you argued that the heart disease condition was held to a pre-existed service, clearly increased in severity during service, and that the evidence did not show there was an increase as a result of natural progression of the disease. Well, were you referring to 1153?
I was.
Okay. Thank you.
Guilty as charged. I was making the same error that the board made in this, that you address 1111 and then you address 1153. That's part of what was clarified in the decision that was made in Wagner.
You were justified in making that.
No, it was pretty clear.
Were you,
it was clear.
Were you substantially justified in going that route?
I want you to know.
I'm not going to offer a plea one way or the other, Your Honor. This case, ultimately, Your Honor, turns on whether or not the VA has made its showing. We have come together here to examine what the board did or did not do. When the board made an assertion that, excuse me, when the VA made an assertion that the board relied upon the then controlling precedent regarding the presumption of soundness is simply not correct. They didn't rely on 3.304. There is no indication, there is no reason to believe that they relied upon 3.304. They relied upon 1153. And I will, for the record, I'm sorry I meant to do this when I stood up, is concede the question that he was a peacetime veteran and 3.306A applies and not B. Unless there's further questions.
Thank you. Case is submitted. We will greet counsel and then adjourn.
Thank you.